You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
And right now, without further ado, here he is, the great bearded one, often mistaken for Michelangelo. Here's Dr. History.
Michelangelo.
That was the best I could do over
the spur of the moment.
Yeah, spur of the moment. Okay. Don't rub it in.
All right. Well, I'm going to say hi to one of our listeners, Jay Hill, down in Texas. And he is sending me about 40 magazines of the old Frontier Times magazines.
Oh, my.
And which I get a lot of stories out of some of those old magazines. So, but he's got quite a family history down there in Texas with the Texas Rangers and his family, and some had been kidnapped. And anyway,
really? His family?
Yeah, quite a history that he's got down there in Texas.
Was he on the right side of the law or the wrong side of the law?
He didn't tell me. He's not in jail.
Hey, Jay, if you're listening, just send us your number and we'll send you some mail.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. I appreciate that. And last week I did mention Dennis and Roxy over there in California. They sent me a couple of books about the history of that area over there. So anyway, I appreciate getting information from listeners, and so I'm always open for suggestions for new stories.
Absolutely. So, now, you told me this morning when you walked in that you had a story about some dumb criminals.
Outlaws. And this comes from a book called Arizona Outlaws and Lawmen.
Oh, I've got a copy of that.
Do you? By Marshall Trimble.
I do.
Yeah. And so I kind of take some of this information from some of his information that he's got here. So the first guy I'm going to talk about is a guy named Anthony Blum.
Blum?
Blum, B-L-U-M. So, You know, there's strange things that happen in the court, and down in Cochise County, there was a scoundrel by the name of Anthony Blum, and he cheated a local priest out of $5,000.
You see, come on. What kind of a guy is this?
Well, he had conned Father Arthur de Brucher into investing into a gold mine that was obviously a sure thing in Gleason, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Well, as these things happen, the mine didn't pan out, so the priest filed suit alleging fraud and misrepresentation. Well, for a couple of years, Blum was able to avoid going to trial. He, for one reason or another, and after he'd exhausted all his excuses, they went to trial in Tombstone. Now, picture this, Zeb. Blum was on the stand, getting ready to testify, when suddenly he slumped forward, clutching his chest. Okay, got the picture?
He had a heart attack.
Well, his personal physician, who just happened to be in the courtroom, rushed forward, examined him, and pronounced sadly that there was no hope. Blum was going to die. He'd be dead within a few minutes. Well, as he lay dying, Blum pleaded for a priest to make his death confession.
You got to be kidding me.
And administer the last rites.
Here he comes.
The only clergy close by and in the courtroom was Father de Brucher. Okay, you could probably tell where this is going,
Jeff. I think I see the yellow brick road.
Okay, the court gave the priest permission to proceed over to Blum's, hear Blum's confession and administer absolution. So after these actions taken place under the priest under the seal of the confession, and which said he could never reveal what Blum told him.
Oh, my
God. All right. But Zeb, a miracle happened.
What happened?
A miracle.
What happened?
Apparently, Blum's confession had cleared his conscience and his heart attack.
Uh-huh.
He immediately regained his health. His doctor examined him and pronounced him fit to go home.
And they couldn't touch him.
Now, wait a minute. The trial was put on hold for another year.
Oh, my goodness.
But since the priest could no longer testify and there were no other witnesses to the scheme, Blum was free to go. The priest was chastised by the church and lost $5,000. The next guy, Cyclone Bill.
Wait a minute. Stop for a minute. That guy, honestly, even though he's a crook with criminal intent and everything, pretty sharp.
Well, you know, he had things figured out.
Yeah, I would say.
Did. Yeah.
What did the judge do during all this?
I don't know. Probably just sat there and watched the whole thing take place.
Wow.
I don't know. So the next guy, Cyclone Bill.
Oh, boy.
He was kind of a shyster, well-known to the bartenders around Arizona, and he had actually studied law in Texas. He became a lawyer, but he didn't practice very long. He claimed his first client was a cowboy charged with stealing cows and assigned him to be the attorney on the job. And he said that, quote, that cow thief took one look at me and said, "Your Honor, I plead guilty." He went on to say, "So I quit practicing law and went to punching cows." So he quit. But somewhere along the line, Cyclone had been shot in the leg, and the wound left him with one leg considerably shorter than the other one. So depending on which leg he was standing on, he could be tall or he could be short.
He could be real short.
Yeah. Now, the old-timers around Clifton tell about the time he bellied up to the bar on Chase Street, and standing on his short leg,
yeah,
he shouted to the bartender, quote, "Bartender, drinks for the house." Okay, so drinks were served all around to everybody, and while the bartender was distracted, old Cyclo Bill, he moved to the other end of the bar and stood among some other drinkers, and so the short man was nowhere to be found. So now he's standing tall, okay? There's the short man that ordered the drinks.
I got you.
He moved down the bar. Now he's tall. And the bartender says, "Where's the little scalawag who ordered drinks for the house?" No one said a word. Well, his real name was William Abe Beck, but everyone called him Cyclone Bill. Now, he claimed the nickname after the railroad reached Yuma in 1877, and there was a lot of money to be made hauling freight by mule team. So he was hired by a freight company to haul a load of goods from Yuma to the old Pueblo. Now, Beck, the freight wagon, and the mules never reached their destination. All had mysteriously vanished. Well, a year later, he showed up in Tucson without the rig, without the mules, the wagon, or any of the goods. He met with the owner, who said, "What happened? Where's my wagon? Where's my 10-mule team?" So Bill claimed that somewhere between Tucson and Yuma, a giant cyclone came roaring down, swallowed the mules,
this is too good to
the
be
wagon,
true.
And himself, whirling them high in the sky and dropped them back to earth somewhere in Kansas.
Where's Toto?
He says he vaguely recalled the wild wind blowing him in an eastward direction. So he headed west for about a year until he got back to Tucson. So in court, Bill swore he had no idea what happened to the mules, the wagon, and the freight, and that he was just lucky to be alive. However, the judge was not very sympathetic towards his tale of a cyclone, and he ended up in jail and the nickname Cyclone Bill.
You've got to be kidding me.
So that must have been one heck of a cyclone.
You've got two good ones
to
there.
To take
this
you from
morning.
Arizona to Kansas, you know?
He actually told the judge.
Yeah. Yep. So, okay.
Have you got another one as good as the first two?
Well, I think you might like this one, too.
Okay.
So this again happened in Arizona. It was a train robbery, and it took place 5 miles west of Wilcox, Arizona.
I've been there.
You've been there.
Yep.
So this was January 30th, 1895. Two cowboys, one named Joe George and Grant Wheeler, decided that they needed to elevate their station in life monetarily by robbing the Southern Pacific Railroad.
This is not a smart thing.
Now, here's where it gets interesting. Neither had ever robbed a train before.
They didn't read the book?
There was no manual. Or whatever. They didn't take any lessons. So this is going to be on-the-job training.
I see.
So the cowboys that wanted to be train robbers purchased a box of dynamite.
This is like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, yeah. They got this at a business in Wilcox, and they told the business owner they were going prospecting, so, you know, they needed the dynamite. Well, they deposited their blasting powder and hobbled their horses about 7 miles west of town, and then they walked a couple of miles back to meet the train. Now, west of Wilcox, there's a grade where the train has to slow down. And while it was slowed down, they jumped on board, and they were able to persuade the engineer to stop the train. Of course, they had Colt 45 revolvers that helped with their persuasion. One of the outlaws jumped down. He uncoupled the passenger's car and signaled the engineer to pull forward with the mail and the baggage cars to where the dynamite was stashed. So now they've moved up the track a ways to where their dynamite is.
And all the people are left uncoupled.
Yeah, they're left back behind.
Okay.
So they broke into the express car, and there was a Wells Fargo messenger, but he had slipped out the door and headed back down where the passenger cars were.
So he got out of there.
He just got out of there. Okay. I guess he could see the writing on the wall.
Yep.
And didn't want to get shot or killed.
He saw a four-letter word that said boom.
Right. And so he left. So now picture this. Inside the express car were two safes.
Yeah.
One was a small, kind of fragile-looking lockbox, and the other was a real sturdy Wells Fargo safe. You know, the big metal.
Yeah, the big dude.
Oh, yeah. And lying nearby on the floor were several sacks full of Mexican silver dollars. Now, at that time, Mexican silver dollars were about the same value as U.S. silver dollars.
Really?
So here's these bags of Mexican silver dollars just laying there. All right?
And they
just laying there. Okay. Now, so Wheeler and George placed a few sticks of dynamite around the two safes.
Oh, my goodness.
They lit the fuses, jumped out the door, landed on the ground. They're covering their heads with their arms. Now, the first blast destroyed the door on the little safe, the fragile one. But it didn't do anything to the Wells Fargo safe.
Really?
Because it was, like I said, the big heavy duty.
Oh, my.
So they tried again. This time.
They went in again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not done. So this time they added a few extra sticks of dynamite for good measure.
Oh, boy.
Once again, they jumped out of the car. They hit the dirt. They covered their heads with their arms. And when the smoke cleared, the big safe was still not hurt.
Twice.
Yeah. The big safe still not even.
What about all the silver coins? They must have been spread from Hickory.
Now, wait a minute, Zeb. You're getting ahead of me.
Well, I'm worried about them.
Okay. We'll get to those. You'll see right here. Okay, they were a little frustrated by now.
I see.
Okay, so they piled the rest of the blasting sticks around the safe.
The rest of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the dumb part, Zeb, which you just alluded to. They packed 8 bags of Mexican silver dollars on top of the dynamite. They struck a match, lit the fuse, and they headed for cover. Well, the blast shook the ground all around. The entire express car was blown to splinters. Pieces of lumber and 1,000 silver pesos were flung far and wide. So it's kind of a miracle that the outlaws even survived the blast. So as you just made, you know, here's these silver missiles flying through the air, going all around, you know, these outlaws. Well, when the smoke cleared, the two outlaws found that the safe door had been blown open on the Wells Fargo safe. And inside, they found a few dollars.
You're kidding me.
That's all they found.
That's all they found?
The real treasure was the Mexican silver pesos.
Over $1,000, right?
Yeah. And they were scattered all over the countryside.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with all that dynamite. Well, the outlaws stuffed a few dollars into their bags, and they rode off into the night. But when the train backed into town, rather than forming a posse, most of the citizens just stampeded out to where the blast and the crime took place, and they went to looking for silver dollars.
Really?
So for several years afterwards, people would find silver dollars, you know, probably within 50 to 7,500 yards.
Oh, easy
or more.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah. Anyway, so those guys were never found.
And they didn't catch them?
No. Never caught them.
Wow.
So,
well, what happened while the people were in the car just down the tracks? Didn't anybody try to stop these guys?
I'm thinking they were far enough away, they decided to just wait and see what happened. They probably figured there was a robbery going on. So here's another one called Russian Bill.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you know, dime novels back in the Old West, they romanticized the outlaws of the Old West, and some people, you know, really thought this was a great thing to become a romanticized outlaw. And these were read by foreigners, too, over in Europe. So the books even inspired a few people to want to go west and become an outlaw. For some, it was not a good business decision. One of Arizona's most kind of exotic outlaws was William Tattenbaum. He was a young Russian officer in the Tsar's army, and he'd read all these books about the Old West, and that just really appealed to him. So he deserted the army in Russia and came to America to become an outlaw. He arrived in Tombstone, Arizona in 1881. He went into the nearest store and bought all the new cowboy clothes, you know, the fancy schmancy hat and the boots and the clothes and everything. So when they asked him his name, he said, "They call me Russian Bill."
Russian Bill.
Well, so he was a bit of a novelty in Tombstone. He tried to act like an outlaw, you know, but he was not taken seriously. I mean, the people, you know, they knew he was not what he was trying to be.
What did he do for a living?
Well, he must have had some money when he got there.
I see.
So, but he was this tall, good-looking guy, curly-headed blonde. He spoke several languages. He was quite intelligent. But he still felt like a phony. So, but he was hanging out with some pretty rough characters, some pretty rough outlaws. But he'd never committed a crime. So he figured he had to do something to establish his reputation as an outlaw. He was an amateur, and he set to work, and he rustled a few cows.
Oh, my.
And, you know, but again, being an amateur, he was captured. He was thrown into jail in a place called Shakespeare, New Mexico. And there he was reunited with a friend from Tombstone named Sandy King. Well, there was a vigilante committee, and they decided the two men had to hang. I don't know what Sandy did, but anyway, Bill and Sandy were placed on the horses, and they were hung from the beams of the dining hall of the Grant Hotel, which also served as the station for the stage line.
Oh, my.
So the next morning when the stage arrived, the passengers got off, they went in for breakfast, and they were greeted by two dead outlaws.
Hanging from the beams?
Hanging from the rafters.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. That'd spoil your eggs.
It would. Well, now, Bill's mother back in Moscow, Russia, wanted to know the circumstances surrounding her son's death. And she was told that he died of a shortage of breath while at a high altitude. And that's the story
of Russian
of
Bill.
Russian Bill.
You know, now, that is amazing. She was over in Russia.
Yeah.
And got word somehow that
that he was dead.
Bill died from a lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
From a high altitude. Yeah.
I don't know where you got those, but those are really some good stories.
Yeah. There's some others here that, you know, that are pretty interesting. But
are they verified stories?
Well, I believe they are, because, you know, the author of this book, he writes for True West magazine.
And I see.
And I think he pretty well has a good hold on the history.
You know, it makes you wonder in the Old West, and I was watching a movie the other night and about the drifters and everything, and they, where they got their money. I'm sure maybe they did some day work at ranches or whatever. But, you know, back in those days, just drifting from town to town and not really having any money or any way to support themselves or buy food or bullets even, kind of wonder what they did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a story, I told another story here a couple of years ago about a guy named George Ruffner that I used in this book here,
yeah.
Texas John Slaughter.
Oh, I know about him. He had a TV show after him.
Okay, and let's see.
He was that sheriff.
Yeah, Texas John Slaughter.
Yeah.
But anyway, some pretty interesting stories about some outlaws that I'm going to guess most people have never heard of.
I loved every one of those. They were really, really good stories. What are you studying for next week?
I've actually come up with about three more stories to come up with for the next month, and
really?
I can't remember a single one of them.
Well, age, of course, you're an old man now.
Yeah, well, what can I say? But I know I've got several ready to go.
All you got to do is find them. What you did with them.
I can't remember which book they're in, but they're there somewhere.
You know, on the people that send you all these notices and everything that they listen to the program, do a lot of them respond and follow up with a lot of the stories and everything?
I always write back to people who write to me and let them know I appreciate their comments and their suggestions. So, we go back and forth. Like Dennis and Roxy over there by Lake Tahoe in that area.
Oh, really?
They've invited me over. He knows a lot of the history of that area. And if I get over that direction, there are several people that I know. Another family, they invited me to stay at their house and take me on a tour over in Virginia City,
Now, that Nevada. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah. So, we have some great people, over there in Wyoming, Thermopolis, we were invited to go over there.
Yep.
And if I get that way, I'm definitely going to look up the people there that invited us and have them give us a tour.
Ladies and gentlemen, every week on Tuesdays at 10:06, it's The Man, Dr. History.